The Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the NBA.
Hey, Al, you ready?
Let's do it.
Now tell me, why is Diddy not one of those many players that brought into the ownership for the Minnesota Timberwolves? That would have been awesome.
I mean,
just contemplating.
Yeah, look,
it now.
He's, I don't know. He's sort of, you don't really hear a whole lot, with him at the moment. You know what I mean? He sort of sits in the shadows a little bit. I think, you know, you don't really hear a lot about Bab, you know. Bit of BB, a bit of Bad Boy Entertainment, you know what I mean? I think they're just happy to sit back.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. This is all NBA talk. We're going to go through a few just talking points. I mean, probably the last one's been a few weeks before our last NBA pod, so just some talking points, just some crazy, you know. Well,
basically, the last one was the trade deadline, so we'll just go through and see who's fitting in nicely at their new homes and I guess we're on a bit of a playoff push now. I think there's less than a month to go in the season, so you know teams are going to be jockeying for position to try and get themselves into that six spot and not the dreaded seven or eight spot. That I think that a lot of teams are sort of trying to push themselves into that upper echelon of the playoff standings.
Mm-hmm. It's all going to come down to who you're playing in that they're playing first as well. But
that's right, and that's the thing too. Like the way that the schedule is at the moment, like it's a lot of just going off what the Knicks. Purely just because I listened to the Knicks and Pelicans on ESPN radio this morning. The Knicks have got like a six game homestand at the moment. They've just come back from a West Coast swing. And that's what's happening at the moment. It's large amounts of it's almost like baseball. It's they'll have a couple of home series. So the NBA will have they'll have a 4, 5, 6 game stint at home, and then they might go on an 8-game road trip. So, I guess to sort of condense down the need for a lot of travel, like they used to do. So, I don't actually mind it. I think it's better for teams continuity rather than just they might just have a 2 or 3 home game stand, and then that they might go away for a few games. I think this is they can definitely learn from this. I think the NBA with how they're scheduling things, because the San Antonio Spurs go through this every year.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they do.
They get booted out of town for 2 weeks for the rodeo.
Because of the
New Orleans, this happens to New Orleans. They get booted out of town for 10 or 11 days while Mardi Gras on.
That's true. The Spurs get booted out for the body. Well, probably not this year, but the Final Four in NCAA tournament as well. I thought they got booted out for that as well. They go on road games. I'm pretty sure.
No, but that's right. Yeah, they get booted out of town. Hmm. Yeah, they don't want to have conflicting interests of people. They just want people to be able to focus on. But it would be the same wherever the Final Four is. Yeah. Each year they would just have to schedule around that one of the reasons why they sort of have it so far in advance. So why they choose the city so far in advance. So if there is conflicting sports in that city, then they can sort of schedule around it.
Yeah, but 9 times out of 10, for some reason, it's always at San Antonio. I reckon they've booked that up for like so many years, which is good. We're talking about actually booting back. I'll scale back to what I was saying at the start, just going over some news. So the Minnesota Timberwolves look like they're on the way to having new ownership.
In 2023.
But it looks like the The two people involved is one billionaire named Mark Law, who I'll talk about in a second, and the other person is not a billionaire. This is why he needed his help as a millionaire, but one Alex Rodriguez.
It's just a strange marriage, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, A-Rod trying to get into the ownership game and it being with the Minnesota Timberwolves, which the deal includes the Minnesota Lynx as well, who have been a hell of a lot more successful in the WNBA as opposed to their male
WNBA
counterparts.
They are Minnesota because
they are Minnesota basketball.
I love that most teams, when you buy them, I think the Utah Jazz was the same, the WNBA teams are always involved in that sort of negotiation as well, which is good. I reckon that's a great idea.
Well, I would say most times that the WNBA team would use the same arena as the NBA team. So, you know, that's got to do with the building more so than the actual, you know, the team itself. But yeah, that's the thing. The Minnesota Lynx have been absolutely 100 times more successful than what the Timberwolves have.
So these two guys know each other pretty well. I mean, we all know who A-Rod is. I mean, I don't really need to go into who he is. But the other guy, Mark Law, is a – I'll first say A-Rod had only had $350 million, so it was valued at that. So he couldn't purchase the team by himself. So this other guy
– absolutely. $1.5 billion.
He's an e-commerce wizard, but basically he made the chunk of his money selling just one website called jet.com to Walmart for $3.3 billion. So which is good, I think. And by the looks of it, this wasn't the first, when I digged more into it, this wasn't the first team that they were sort of going after. They would try to get the New York Mets before they got sort of sold last year.
So. Yeah, well, the A-Rod slash Jennifer Lopez contingency were definitely in on trying to get a slice of the New York Mets, but
that sort of
fell through a little bit.
Is he still got the Miami Marlins in that stake?
No, Derek Jeter's the one who's got his finger in the pie with the Miami Marlins. Yeah, well, he's basically I guess a. You could say he's an executive for the Miami Marlins. Like he's the face. I think he does a lot of dealings, with media and things like that when it comes to the Marlins down there in Miami. So I listen to a very Miami centric podcast. So I tend to hear a lot about the Marlins and there's a guy that actually ran the team. He was the GM there for 17 years, I think, David Sampson, and he comes on the show every week. So you get good little inside tidbits on the runnings of the team and good little stories about what he did with the former owner Jeffrey Lurie. It's really good, like once a week, to sort of hear the inside workings of how how a baseball team sort of goes about things.
So we won't spend too much on this, but everything I've read so far, I guess the deal is going to be around that $1.5 billion mark. They're valued at $1.375, but then the Utah Jazz sold for about $1.6
billion. I think that's more than fair.
Yeah, I think
so. For the Minnesota Timberwolves, you'd think that. Obviously, they're probably that they wouldn't be one of the most valuable franchises around in the NBA at the moment. But digging into that, finding out that the Utah Jazz were sold for $1.6 billion, which that's disgusting money. Disgusting money. But
it's an Australian guy too.
You would have thought that the Utah Jazz would have been maybe valued a little bit more than that. And funnily enough, D Wade now has started to buy in a little bit as a minority owner the Utah Jazz as well.
He's the guy that owns that team's an Australian billionaire. He made his money over there, so he was. And he said like when he grew up in Australia, he loved the Utah Jazz. Karl Malone, John Stockton, that's all he ever talked about. So, which is great, obviously, but
nice to have a dream and to be able to take that on and actually own the team that you rooted for. That's awesome.
The one big question before we move on, and by the looks of it's confirmed, is that they are not moving the team. They 100% keeping the team there. Because that's obvious. That's an obvious question from fans, obviously.
Sure, they're not moving the team.
Well, you think they will?
Look, I don't care whatever language they want to write in the contract to say that, hey, no, we won't move the team. As soon as they take over ownership in 2023, I guarantee you they're going to be exploring moving the team. Absolutely.
I mean, you'd have to explore it, but, you know, it depends who comes to the
table. And that's where the speculation comes in because, you know, A-Rod's got ties back to Seattle. It's the perfect match is moving this team to Seattle.
Well, yeah. Seattle Timberwolves. Yeah, that's not a bad ring to it.
Well, you don't even have to call it the Seattle.
Well, no, you don't.
When the Sonics moved to OKC, they didn't keep. They're not called the Oklahoma City Sonics. They're called the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah,
you just revive the Sonics. You bring back the green and yellow. Like it's a match made in heaven. It's interesting to know about the former owner now, Glenn Taylor, that he bought the Timberwolves in 1994. Mm-hmm. So they were an expansion team in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
1988. They were an expansion team. So, you know, that was them, the Charlotte Hornets, the Miami Heat were all expansion teams in that era. It's just funny that in 6 years that they were sold, you know, straight away to Glenn Taylor for $88 million. So, you know, that's not a bad investment. You can grow $88 million into $1.5 billion. Like that's be such a you can say, oh yeah, I would say a non-successful franchise.
Well, that's right. That's what I was about to say. So that $1.5 billion to me is on the back of the NBA growth, not so much the Timberwolves.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why it was a savvy investment, really, when you look at it. I mean, if you get not that they'll ever get sold, but your teams like your Lakers and your let's throw the Heat in there and all that. I mean, even the Warriors now, they'd have to be $2 billion valuations.
Maybe more than that.
You reckon?
It's usual suspects that are the most valuable franchises in the NBA. It's the Lakers. It's the Knicks. Do you know what I mean? Then it's like the Clippers and then the Warriors. It's still I don't care what anybody says. You know, Brooklyn's trying to muscle in on the Knicks, you know, territory and everything. That it's going to take them still a little while to sort of muscle in. And it's still I don't care what anybody. And that's just probably the old school in me it's the Knicks. It's the brand.
No, I totally agree. I listened to my podcast. Speaking of podcasts, I listened to a guy. I don't know if you know him. John. Just I never say his last name right. John Travensky. He was a New York radio guy, just about sports. And now he's moved over to sort of podcasts. And it's literally the podcast is called New York, New York. So he does everything New York centric. So obviously your Yankees, your Mets, your Jets, you know, and all those sports and all the teams. That question came up, like, as he gets fan questions and that, and he said, you know, forget what the Mets and if they Nets win, all good. But he said he could walk out right now to anywhere, even in Brooklyn, and ask 10 people who are your fans of, and he guarantees that eight or nine, probably eight of them would say that they're Knicks fans.
They're Knicks fans, of course.
It's a Knicks town. That's just how it is. It's always going to be like that. It's always going to be like that.
Knicks and Yankees.
That's right. You're exactly right. Other bit of news. I mean, we could talk about the injuries and then sort of coming backs later, but I wanted to
haven't we had some rough. Oh, no, rough injuries.
Let's talk about
just
it
this year, like, you know.
Yeah. Now let's talk about it now. I mean, the couple of injuries lately, the devastating injuries. I'll throw the first one, Jamal Murray.
Oh, man.
That just put a dent in Nuggets? Oh, my God.
That was hard to watch. Like, I was actually watching that game on ESPN, and it was just a nothing, just a nothing play, just a drive, simple drive to the basket. You know, it goes up off his left foot. And then, yeah, as he comes down, you see him just writhing in agony on the ground. You're like, oh, man, like, just don't. You see him sort of holding the top of the quad, or the bottom of the quad, you know, on top of the knee. And it's like, well, maybe it's not, you know, maybe it's not an ACL. Maybe he copped a bump or you know, maybe he landed on it wrong. And you're like, oh, you just hope that it's not going to be the worst. And then pretty much the next day, it was the worst case scenario and torn ACL. And that's going to be, you know, that's the season done.
It is. Unfortunately, I mean, as soon as I seen it, I just Googled Jamal Murray as soon as I seen the injury. And the first thing comes up just from Denver Post, the title is Jamal Murray's injury a sign from the basketball gods that they hate the Nuggets? Like, that's obviously from Denver's newspaper.
Oh, man. That is rough.
That's from Denver's newspaper. So, of course, I can say that. Look.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
He's still young. He's 24. So, you know, that he could definitely get over this. As for this year...
Oh, no, this is a setback, and this is, you know, this is the new age of medicine. You know, you go back to the 70s and 80s, and if you ruptured an ACL, tore an ACL, that's it. You're done. Your career's finished. Yeah, it's just, look at the way that it... And then once you started to get to, you know, to the late 80s, the 90s, then the next big injury was Achilles. You rupture an Achilles... That's pretty much going to be your career done. And now people come back from it. So he can absolutely get through this. So,
he'll come back. That was never my question. I guess the question I wanted to pose is now, do the Nuggets make noise in the playoffs? Which is pretty simple.
I don't think so.
No. I think the Aaron Gordon trade was a stroke of genius. That seems to be working out tenfold already. That's just.
No, that's right. But boy, couldn't they use Gary Harris now?
Yeah, good point. Very, very good point. I'm assuming they're hoping that someone's going to fall off the waiver wire somewhere, but I completely doubted it in a guard. But I think as good as Jokic is playing,
just puts more pressure on him now. Yeah, he's having an MVP type season, but. That's putting a lot of pressure. Well, I mean, that's putting a lot of pressure on him, on Michael Porter Jr., and now Aaron Gordon.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, Murray was just coming to his straps. I mean, his stats were getting crazy. He was coming into his straps, and he's coming back to where he was playoffs last year. So I think, no, I agree. They might finish in the playoffs top four, but they're not going to make
it. Oh, no, they still have enough firepower to hover around sort of the mid table there in the playoffs. I can only see, you know, that they might drop off a little bit, but you know, that like I said, you know, it just puts a lot more pressure on those three sort of big guns there in Denver. So not to say that you can't rule them out, but yeah, that there's some, you know, that there's teams that are going to be healthy that you think would be an unlikely, you know, run to say the Western Conference Finals or something like that. Do you know what I mean? That they could probably sneak through the first round, but I don't see them getting too much further than that.
Couple of the other injuries, which probably don't have to touch on this one much, probably because they're not going to make noise anyway, but it is devastating as well. Gordon Hayward, it looks like he'll be sidelined for 4 weeks with a right foot sprain.
Look, his numbers have been terrific this year. Yeah.
100%.
You know, 19.5 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, shooting 41% from 3.
Yeah.
That's
a big stat.
Yeah. That's right. And that's the thing. It's not as if he I think he makes 2.5 threes a game. So
yeah.
It's hitting him at a high clip as well. So to me, sort of Charlotte are a little bit on the fall at the moment, obviously, with the Mellow Ball being out as well with that fractured wrist. So, look, they're on the sink at the moment. They, at the time of the injury, that Gordon Hayward went down, they were 2 games above 500. Now they're sort of sitting at 500 at 28-28. So it's just a matter of, I guess, sort of maybe how far they start to drop down. And the funny thing is, too, is, you know, sort of digging a little bit deeper into this as well, where they're at the moment, this is the best record that they've been this late in the season since 99-2000. And that's the Baron Davis years. That's the Baron Davis rookie.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense. I mean, they've always been an afterthought, really. We kept saying they were an afterthought this year when, well, we didn't know what LaMelo was going to do. We said this before they even drafted LaMelo. But we said while Gordon Hayward might be, you know, might make a little bit of noise there, you know, when you have the terrible contracts of Zeller and everyone like that, we didn't think anything was going to happen. Not to this aspect anyway, but they've wildly exceeded expectations. And yes, Gordon Hayward, but I mean, you'd have to throw LaMelo Ball in there as well.
Right, LaMelo Ball, Terry Rozier, Miles Bridges.
Just putting
people on posters for fun.
Clint Capella just got passed. I said it to you.
Oh my God, he ruined him. He ruined him.
I messaged you before the All-Star weekend. I said, I do not get, and I didn't even remember, they can't even remember the three people they put in there now. That guy should be in there.
He totally should have been in there.
The dunk competition, because that was, my God, that was a fierce dunk. Holy Jesus. Clint Capella just, wow. He stood there.
That could ruin a man's career.
Wow.
And in saying that, like Atlanta have been really good. You know, it sucks to say that they've been really good since they fired Lloyd Pierce. But Atlanta today against Indiana, like Clint Capella had 25 points and 24 rebounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, his rebounding numbers are unbelievable.
Atlanta's a team I want to actually. That's a team I was going to talk about later. But I just coming back to a couple more injuries. Well, really, a couple more. You may as well just, you know, circle the entire Brooklyn Nets. I mean, starting with the most obvious, LaMarcus Aldridge, unfortunately having to retire. Probably not an injury, but it came to that. Really, if you think it's he had an irregular heartbeat, so. Think of that what you will. I don't know.
Apparently, he's been dealing with this for a little while.
Sorry?
He's been dealing with this condition for a little while, which can cause an irregular heartbeat, and now it's just reared its ugly head and forced him into retirement.
I heard that as well. But then my thing is, and then clearly this doesn't happen in the NBA that much, but isn't when you have a trader, you sign a free agent. I mean, it's probably the NFL more, but or even the NRL is probably perfect. But don't you have like a physical?
What? You got to pass a physical and a medical. Well, you go back to Indiana and Caris LeVert when he got traded there. You know, funnily enough, that's Brooklyn Nets ties as well. But you know, they'd found out that he'd had a lung condition or something like that that he never would have found out that he had if he didn't go for this medical.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
I hope I've got that right. If with a lung condition, oh, I'm not 100% sure.
I think so. But yeah, sorry, just with LaMarcus. Like, it makes sense. Regardless of if it was early, it doesn't matter. Like, he was a great player, a really good player. I think they were talking about, at least the players were coming forward about retiring his number at Portland Trailblazers. I think I liked him for the fact of he was a. He got his work done and wasn't talked about that much, or he didn't have to. It was like Tim Duncan. If you I'm going back to the Spurs, like he just did what he needed to do. Tim Duncan's a way better player. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like he's quiet. He just did his work. You never hear him. He didn't make any noise. No one whinged about him. He was well liked.
King of the mid range, an unbelievable mid range player.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he well deserves what you would think it'd be Portland because that's where he made his millions, so to speak. That's where he made his career, really.
That's where he made his career, Mark. You know, he spent the last 5.5 seasons at San Antonio, which that just doesn't feel like he's been at San Antonio for 5 years, but he's been in San Antonio for 5 years.
That's right.
He just goes about his business. He doesn't blow you off the stat sheet. He just goes about his daily work, And he made it to me. He just continued on, I guess, that legacy there at San Antonio of just them not so much being the quiet achievers, but do you know what I mean? Like you said, with Timmy D, and you know, they had the superstars in Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili and those guys and Kawhi Leonard. They're all very, very quiet stars in the league.
Mm. Yeah, they are. I mean, there's another injury, but this is probably just he keeps getting injured, and he just got injured again. And today, like Kevin Durant's injury.
Oh man, like just.
And he's just breaking down. He's just got back.
Just a nothing drive to the basket, and it's almost like a cork. But boy, he's got skinny little thighs.
Well, they said that he could have another stint on the sidelines, even though he just got back.
He's come back from a hamstring injury. Now, you know, James Harden has been sidelined for a little while with hamstring injuries. Kyrie Irving is in and out, whether it's personal reasons or whatever injury that he wants to come up with, so he can have a little bit of rest. And Brooklyn just keeps, I don't know, they just keep on keeping on, I guess. Like it's a luxury to be able to have that type of roster, but these types of things. Are they going to come back to bite him in the ass come playoff time?
Possible. It's definitely possible. My concern is just more Kevin Durant. I think, ever since, what was it? What did he do? He did the Achilles. Did he the Achilles or the ACL? I thought it was Achilles.
No, it was Achilles in the finals with Golden State.
It wasn't an Achilles.
When he first got injured, it was they kept saying, oh, no, it's only a calf muscle. It's only a calf muscle. Nothing to see here. Everything's cool. And he kept missing more playoff games and more playoff games. And then it was, we need to sort of rush him back. And then it all sort of come out in the wash. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, it kind of was an Achilles injury. And then they tried to rush him back for that. I can't remember if it was game 5 or game 6. I think it might have been game 6 against Toronto. And he looked like there was no ill effects on it, and then it was just a nonchalant sort of injury and ruptured his Achilles and done. So it was they had Klay Thompson out there as well, you know, there's not a whole, you have a look at him, like, you know, he's extremely slender, shall we say.
Well, that's what I meant. I think everybody, that's sort of thing. I think everything is catching up with him. The way he's been going this year, I honestly think he's on the road to like calling it quits. No, I'm not saying straight away, but I think he's just on the road that he's going to keep getting too many injuries, and it's all going to catch up on him. As great a player as he is, but it's slender. Absolutely. He's 7 foot.
He just seems, especially lately, he just seems like an unhappy dude in what he does.
What's he got, a 2-year contract this year and next year, I think it was? Was it a 2-year?
Yeah, I think so.
I'll be surprised.
Probably two-year with a player option.
I'll be surprised if he keeps playing. I don't know.
He's said that he's not in for the championships now, so he just wants to play ball. But like I said, he just seems like an unhappy man. Like, yeah, the last couple of years, that's the thing as well, you know, when you're injured and you've got to do a lot of, you know, things on your lonesome and rehab and stuff like that, and you're not being with your teammates and those sorts of things, they weigh you down. And you know, he thought he was going to get validation by going to Golden State and winning a couple of titles and getting a couple of finals MVPs and things like that, and it just hasn't worked out that way. And just, you know, his behavior on social media with Twitter and the burner accounts and things like that. It all mounts up. And when you've got three enigmatic people on the same team, like, you know, what sort of headspace are they all in?
Well, by the looks of it, even though how it was at the start of the year, the only one that seems to have their head on straight is buddy James Harden. Even the crap he pulled at the start of the year, he's been the most adaptable.
Yeah, that's right. Look, he's been balling.
Yeah,
played. I think that Kyrie, KD, and James Harden have played. Did I hear three or seven?
No, I heard seven. That's all I heard. Seven games.
Right, it was seven.
Yeah, seven games. I was about to say.
Was that
yeah,
on the
seven
today?
Games.
Was that on the Heat? That on the Heat Brooklyn game today? Seven games total.
Total. Total.
Together. That's what we're saying. Together.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you know, that's what I mean. That's
they're
still.
They're going to need a lot more than that to get a little bit of continuity come playoff time because yes, they're going out there and. You know, they're destroyed. Obviously, they lost today, you know, on a Bam Adebayo buzzer beater. But, you know, they're going out there and they'll go out there and they'll kick the crap out of the Detroits and, you know, the Cavs and the Wizards and things like that. But once they start getting into the playoffs, then it starts to get real because, okay, all well and good. You'll have your 8 seed or your 7 seed that you'll play in the first round, but then your next opponent will be higher than that. And you're in a 7-game series. So teams are going to start to, they're going to start taking away what you like to do. And they'll start to figure out, you know, they'll start to figure these things out as playoff series go on. That's the point.
Interesting you say that because then the next bit I wanted to talk about was the return of two players to the one Los Angeles Lakers, Anthony Davis. Could be about, close to nearly around 2 weeks away and followed really closely behind by LeBron James.
He's been cleared to practice today.
So, since Davis has been out, I guess, the Lakers have fell to 12 and 13 and obviously falling from the number 2 to number 5 in the standings. Is it too late for them to keep moving up? Like, I mean, once these two guys are back?
Once they get back, like the thing will be is yes, they're in a bit of a free fall at the moment, but as long as they don't sink below the 6th spot and then they don't have to get into that stupid playoff scenario, the play-in scenario, as long as they keep themselves, treading water, keep themselves above or, you know, in the 6th spot or above, then they should be okay. It'll be a matter of, yes, those guys are getting some rest, but they'll want to make sure that their bodies are going to be right for the playoff push because if we all know that there's championship aspirations in both LA teams.
Yeah.
So, but you know, especially for the Lakers, obviously the defending champions, but that they can ill afford to have any one of those two guys go down in the playoffs. Because that is big, big trouble. Even though the terrific acquirement of Andre Drummond, and that's, I mean, he's sort of proving his worth at the moment. But once those guys come back,
they smashed Brooklyn Brooklyn with full strength, and they smashed them. I could not believe that game that they smashed Brooklyn.
Oh, they played a game the other day that there was just completely starless. And it would have been a marquee matchup against the Utah Jazz. You know, that there was obviously the Lakers without their two big guns, but, you know, Utah without Donovan Mitchell, they didn't have Derek Favors, they didn't have Rudy Gobert, they didn't have Bogdan Bogdanovic. So, Bojan Bogdanovic. So, you know, that they didn't have Mike Conley, so they were totally starless. And LA ended up winning in overtime. But they're just sort of treading water enough, you know, like you said, you know, they're one game under 500 since AD went down. So it's treading water, making sure that they don't lose too many more games before they come back, where if they start to sink into that 7 or 8 spot and they have to push themselves a little bit too much to get themselves out of that play-in scenario, then that I think that could not to say that it will, but that could spell a little bit of trouble for the Lakers. And
yeah,
it's not going to matter once. Yeah. It's not going to matter if AD and LeBron are healthy. It's not going to matter where they finish. It's not going to matter.
No, that's exactly
home right. Home court advantage this year more than ever means jack shit.
Crap.
Doesn't mean anything.
And we said at the start of the year even. Well, if those two guys are there and healthy, we still are the favorites because for the fact of their team got better than last year and then you add Andre Drummond into that piece, you know, they're going to be pretty hard to stop. LeBron himself, we talked about Kevin Durant's injuries. This guy, he's a freak. LeBron's a freak with, you know, but he looked, he's, he throws about $1 million a year into his body, but clearly it shows. He's hardly injured.
Same with Tom Brady. Same with Russell Wilson. They spend over $1 million on, you know, body preparation, you know, whether it's, yeah, food, supplements, steroids, human growth hormones, whatever they want to throw into the body, you know.
Well, interesting you say that. What do you think the hell's in Steph Curry's body at the moment?
Oh my God. He's been drinking. You see all the pictures go around from, was it last week, where CP3 is sitting on the bench drinking Chris's secret stuff. I think Steph Curry, he hasn't been drinking Steph's secret stuff. He's been drinking Michael's secret stuff out of Space Jam. Good God.
He's just on a tear. Like, so he was the last game with the blowout, I think it was against OKC. So he got 42 points in 29 minutes.
Okay. All right. Let me just hit you with his last 10 games, all right? Okay. So 32 points in a win against Chicago. 36 points in a loss against Miami. 37 points in a loss against Atlanta. 41 in a win against the Bucks. 32 in a loss against Washington, and now we start to get into the stupid numbers. 38 in a win against Houston. 53 in a win against Denver. 10 of 18 from downtown. 42 in a win against OKC. 11 for 16 from downtown. Then a little drop off, bit of a mediocre 33 in a win against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And then in a loss against Boston, his most recent game, just 11 for 19 and 47 points. Let me hit you with something else. Let's go through some of the best shooters. Let's just say not of all time, but you know, some great shooters that have been that have been in the past. Okay, so players with 10 plus 3-pointers.
This
in
is
their
the
career.
Stat that I got. This is the stat that I got. I've got a crazy
best
one.
Okay,
you go
so.
Yours.
Ray Allen.
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah.
There's just some randoms. Kyrie Irving, zero. Reginald Keith Miller. Reggie Miller, zero.
Reginald Keith Miller.
KD, zero. Kobe Bryant, one.
One?
One. Ooh. A real random one that sort of come out when they're doing this. Paige Stojakovic. One.
That is random.
Right. Steph Curry has got three this week.
Yes, because that's the stat I had. So the stat
three
I had.
Three this week.
The stat that I had.
He's hit 10 threes in his career 20 times. 20. The next best is 5. And who do you think that is?
Clay Thompson.
Five times, 10 plus threes in a game.
Clay Thompson? No.
Absolutely.
Oh, it is Clay Thompson.
His running mate, Clay Thompson.
Of course it is. I found another observed stat, just on that little three-game tear you're talking about. So the most threes in
three games this week. Ray Allen never had one in his entire career, and he's had three this week.
The most threes in a three-game span in NBA history, in a three-game span from that one you just happened this week. So you got 29 in that between April 9th and 14th in those three games. 29. He owns four of them. No one else is closer. He got 29 this year. 28 because we can't have 20. You have to rule out 20 to go 20 because he was injured. 28 in 2019. 28 in 2017. 27 in 2016. So basically, once a year on point, he's doing at least 25 three-pointers in three games.
In three games. And that's, just in his last week, you know, he's hit 30. What was he hit? 30.
God.
36 threes in his last four games. There's like five teams in the NBA that haven't made that many teams.
When he shoots, we all say this about a lot of players, like he's so effortless. But it is effortless. He looks like he puts no effort into it at all. Like he weighs next to nothing. I haven't looked how much he weighs, but he looks like he weighs next to nothing. And he just, Oh my God! Like there's no effort in that at all.
6'3", 185. So, in saying that, at 6'3", 185 would be, I don't know, 85 kilos, 90 kilos.
At 85, 90 kilos, but he's 6'3"
that's
too.
6'3", like that's not too bad. Like you have a look at him when he first come in, you know those jerseys, they were massive on him.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, whether or not he's just like, oh, do you have any extra small jerseys or not? But they clearly, or do you have any children's size jerseys that you can put on me? But clearly they wouldn't have been long enough at a 6'3 body. But yeah, he's not super, you know, he's definitely not as slender as what he used to be. Like, you know, he's built an all right body for himself at the moment. You know, he looks like a guy that can absolutely, you know, put on the kgs like Anthony Davis. Like when Anthony Davis come out of college, when he come out of Kentucky, boy, he was thin.
Yeah.
And he got hurt. And he got hurt a lot in his first 3 years in New Orleans. But once he started to stack on some kegs, once he started to get a bit of bulk in the body, have a look at him now. Like, you know, he's not missing a whole lot of games. Obviously, he's missing games now. But, you know, in his last 4 years, he's missed a hell of a lot less than what he did, just by purely putting on a bit of bulk.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, no, I agree. He's the best shooter I've ever seen, like the best shooter I've ever seen, pure shooter.
And the scary thing is I think the second best shooter that I've ever seen is Klay Thompson.
It's Klay Thompson, I agree, because Klay doesn't even need to take steps to shoot. He'll catch and shoot a lot. It's ridiculous.
Klay Thompson. This is Klay Thompson is the best catch and shoot player I've ever seen.
Yes, he is. I agree. I totally agree with that. There's a YouTube clip going around where they show like 23s he gets and he makes two steps in those whole 23s. Two. So absolutely insane. The other thing I wanted to touch on before we. Usually we talk about our surprise or disappointing players and teams that have been, I guess, happening in the last few weeks was the Dallas Mavericks and their owner and star player not being fans of the same thing that we're not fans of, the play-in.
Oh, finally. So some people out there with some sense about.
I mean, Mark Cuban coming out, the biggest thing he said is things. He said, in hindsight, it's an enormous mistake.
He was the one that voted for it, though. It was all voted through by the owners. Yeah. I don't know what he's complaining about, but.
His biggest thing is that, well, I mean, I sort of get Doncic to an aspect, but his biggest thing is it just compresses the, it doubles the stress of the compressed schedule.
That's what Mark Cuban sort of coming out and saying, you know, and that's, I mean, it's a 10 game less season. You know, it's a 72 game season, obviously extremely compressed as well to try and pump this season in before the Olympics. So I guess that's where sort of Mark Cuban sort of coming from. But, you know, Doncic is sort of coming out there and say that, okay, you might make the 7 or 8 spot, but, you know, it can happen to any team. You can have a bit of a 2 game horror stretch against somebody and then boom, the whole season that you've worked for is gone.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree.
I never sort of go out there and do a Vince McMahon and say in the interest of fairness that, you know, life's not fair. But like, you know, like we say, you know, we'll say it to you blue in the face, that you just absolutely cannot reward the mediocrity. This is why you play the season for. Every game, I don't care what anybody says, it's just an 82-game season, 72-game season. Every game counts. And if you want to blow off games at the start of the year and go, oh, well, they don't matter, and only the games after the All-Star break matter, it's just like, well, no, because you put yourself in the position that you're going to be in at the end of the season with wins at the start of the season. If it didn't matter, then you would just start your regular season record after the All-Star break. If it didn't matter, all of these games count.
They do. But then, you know, again, this is then, I mean, I even thought of this stupid load management. There's no reason why you can't do loads management. Then all you got to do is make, you know, essentially make 9th or 10th position just to have a chance of being in a playoff that's game. Right. It's just ludicrous.
Then all you got to do is have a hot 2-game streak. You're done. So the other thing that sort of sparked my interest about that a little bit, just sort of thinking about it, actually just last night while I was listening to the Pels and the Knicks. So as if it's not hard enough for the 7 or 8 seed, you know, to go into a playoff series against a 1 or a 2 seed, right? You know, that's always going to be fraught with disaster. It hasn't happened all that often in, you know, in NBA history where an 8 seed has knocked off a 1 seed in the first round of the playoffs. So the 1 and 2 seed, they just get to kick back, relax, and watch the 7, 8, 9, and 10 seeds beat the living crap out of each other.
Yeah.
And okay, whether or not it's a 1 game or a 2 game play in, you know, if the 9 seed or if the bottom seed, you know, wins a game, obviously they've got to win 2 to get through. But it's a playoff intensity, playoff style basketball. So it's going to be super intense. And that's something that they're going to go out there and just beat the crap out of each other just to try and get the opportunity to go in to a 1 seed or a 2 seed matchup, especially, you know, it doesn't matter who it is, whether you're in the West or the East. The top 2 teams, they're pretty tough outs.
Mm-hmm.
So it like I said, it's not fair on the 7 and 8 seed who've worked all year to try and get into there to have to go and play these ridiculous games against teams that are 1 and 2, 3 games worse off a record of what they are, to go into a playoff type environment and a playoff type intensity game just to go and have to play a 1 or a 2 seed. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I totally agree. That's the biggest thing I don't like about it, is that the 7th and 8th team have no advantage at all. They have no advantage at all.
So you're not getting, that's what I mean, you're not getting any advantage anyway because you've got to play a 1 or a 2 seed. But you want to make it harder.
I know, I get that,
them?
But you still, you know, you're still in the playoffs. You know, you've worked hard to get to the playoffs. But then the other thing I really don't like about it is, I guess for me, I don't know, I just, it's going to come into its head, really, at the end of the day. It's going to come to its head when those 7th or 8th teams, and it hasn't happened yet because it's only been 1 year, but the 7th and 8th team, they're the ones that'll lose one of these playing games. Once they lose them,
it's going to happen.
But I'm saying, once that happens, those teams will come out and just be whinging and all that, although they would have had to vote for it, saying, oh, well, but I finished 7th and I got beaten by 10th, so now I'm out. Like, that's just dumb. Like, it's going to happen, but that's when it's all going to come up to a head, I think. We both have never liked it. It does not make sense. I mean, the East in itself is, your 7th and 8th is under 500 most of the times, or on 500 anyway. So really, you know, you're giving them, sorry to say to the East, but giving them worse records to make the play-in.
No, absolutely. That's what I mean. It's ridiculous. You look at the East standings right now. You look at Toronto and Indiana, who are on the outside looking in. Indiana is 2 games behind Charlotte and three games behind the Heat. The Raptors are 24 and 34, so they're 2 games behind the Pacers.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, you get... That's what I mean. You're sort of in the modern era that it's been now with 7-game series as the first round, because, you know, back in the day it used to just be, you know, it used to be that it would just be a 3-game series.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the first one that always comes to mind is 94 with, I think it was the Denver Nuggets knocked off Seattle.
Yeah.
And the famous picture or the famous video of Mutombo on the ground holding the ball, you know, on the floor holding the ball. You know, the Knicks in 99 in the lockout shortened season knocked off the Heat.
Yeah.
In 99, they made the NBA Finals as an 8 seed, and then I think they got swept, or might have been 4-1 against San Antonio. But the big one, yeah, or the pretty much the first time that it happened as a seven-game series was the 2007 Golden State Warriors over the Mavericks.
Mavericks, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Baron Davis, that was Steven Jackson, that was Monte Ellis, Matt Barnes, yep. Al Harrington. You know, that sort of squad coming out and knocking off an extremely fancied Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, no, that's
I think Donnie Nelson might have been coaching. He was coaching the Warriors then.
Yeah, which is ironic because then he ended up coaching the Mavericks after that.
I think he was in the head office after that.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. If it's there forever, it's there forever. It's just, yeah, we say it all the time. It rewards mediocrity, but I'm glad players coming out is fine, but owners wouldn't be coming out because they would have had to vote on it. So that's on cue. Exactly. So,
People come out and sort of taking shots at Doncic and going, oh well, you should be playing better. You know, you're the new and up and coming superstar. You've got one of the best sidekicks in Kristaps Porzingis. Kristaps Porzingis has played half this season. He's doing that on his own.
Yeah, yeah.
He is essentially doing that on his own.
Yeah, he is. He is.
And it's all credit to him.
And that's why they're sitting seventh at the moment, because they were. Right. Yeah, he's doing that on his own back. Which actually then leads me to, I mean, we usually call it, we can stick to this, but we usually call it our studs and duds in the NRL and all that, and the NFL, or disappointing teams or disappointing players and then surprise players. But it doesn't matter which one we start with. I just wanted to start with a disappointing team, to be honest. And they were going well, and then it just... Something plateaued in the last 10 games, and that's Oklahoma City Thunder. They've lost the last 10 games.
Look, OKC, I don't think had any sort of expectations coming into this season.
Correct.
And, you know, before the 10-game losing streak, you know, being 20 and 27 is very admirable for the roster that they got. Just sort of a piece together roster and 46 draft picks over the next 6 years.
They must be saving a bucket load of money because I can only assume so. The biggest contract they have on there is Al Horford at $27.5 million.
That's right, exactly.
The next is Shea at $4 million. So yeah, that's it. Exactly. So anyway,
but they've got some good talent there and hopefully they can sort of hit on some of the draft picks that they've acquired. They're in the same boat as New Orleans. Like their draft picks, they're worthless. Like they're coming from, you know, the OKC are getting draft picks from the Clippers. They're going to be late first round picks, worthless. The Pels are getting late first round picks from the Lakers. They're worthless. So they need to try and turn those draft picks into players. By trading them away. That's the only way that they have any sort of value, because taking them into the draft, they're worthless.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's not really disappointing.
Yeah, they've got
because...
picks. The pick swap thing is the only way that they can have any sort of value if the team is absolutely god awful and they can just go, oh, well, pick swap time.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It was glaring to me the last 10 games that they lost. Yes, they had no expectations, but they were going pretty well. They were, before that, I think they were, 20-27, so they were in that sort of play-in area. Like they were hovering around that. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen anymore. But how about yourself? What did you have as disappointing team or players?
Up until recently, I thought that the Boston Celtics have been extremely disappointing this year. And yes, they've won six. Well, they've won six. That's what I mean. They're proving me wrong at the moment. They won six on the trot. You know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are lighting it up. But they have been. I think they for all well and good. They've lost. Gordon Hayward, but that's just elevated the play of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and I just don't think that they're living up to the expectation. I think that they firmly believe that they were a top two, top three side.
Oh yeah.
In Eastern Conference, and they just haven't lived up to that billing.
No, I agree. I I totally agree with that. I did end up having them on my surprise team because of that reason. Surprising, not like a stud or anything, but surprising because they were so down. Then they had this six-game streak.
They're starting to come good at the right time of the year, which is the way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, Jason Tatum, someone's talked to him or something because he's just been on a tear. Like, he smashed 44 out against the Warriors.
That's right, yeah. Curry got 47, Tatum got 44. Yeah. And that's what I mean. And the thing is, like, these six wins, is what they've been on the West Coast swing. So these have been against Western Conference teams as well. So it's not as if they're sort of putting a whooping on some of the poor teams that are in the East. Okay, granted, there've been some ordinary teams in the West as well, but you know, to go on a West Coast swing and now they're on their way back home, I'm pretty sure now, you know, to be able to knock off these more fancied sides, especially in the Western Conference, it's I mean they're playing well at the right time of year, but I just think the sample size before this six-game winning streak has been a little disappointing, I think, for the type of roster. And we've said it before that they lack depth, but their starting five is pretty damn good. And the three stars that they have there in Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown, that should be enough fuel to sort of push you into, you know, the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference, absolutely.
And then having Evan Fournier come off the bench, I mean, he's only played sort of three games in the last 10, but he's still getting 15 points a game. So
no, that's right. And that's a good serviceable. That's a great acquisition for them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, very true.
Just to shore up that, but just to have somebody on the bench that you can sit your stars for a little bit and you know you're not going to struggle to score points.
That was to me that $70.5 million trade exception they have, which is spent all on him, was, I think, that's, it was worth massive. It. They had to give up nothing. Absolutely. That's why, because that's they had the money there to get rid of. They would have lost it in November, apparently. So, I think it was a very, very good pickup.
Shrewd.
I did say they were sort of, I guess, my surprise sort of team. So, did you have any surprising before we finish up?
I think the surprising team for me, I think it's pretty glaringly obvious, I think, and that's the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they've
been unbelievable.
Yep.
It's the CP3 catalyst that, you know, you go back through his career, he makes every team that he plays for better. Yeah, you know, in New Orleans when he got there, better. Just the win percentage goes up. They make the playoffs. Goes to the Clippers, they're exponentially better. Yeah, you know, it goes to OKC, like he was unbelievable last year at OKC. Houston, he got better. The couple of years that he was there at Houston, he elevated them, and they were, you know, a horrendous shooting night away from them knocking off the Golden State Warriors. If they have a mediocre type game in shooting the three, they knock off the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, they are only 1.5 games from which I never would have thought, clinching the number one position in the West, which, going by the table, would be exponentially great for them, because if the Lakers sort of sit and the Clippers sit where they are, they'll miss them up until the finals. So
that's right, exactly, and that's exactly what you want. And you know, Utah might be on a little bit of a slide at the moment, just purely slightly on the fact that they've lost Donovan Mitchell for a little while with that ankle sprain. So they might start to slip a little bit, and you know, if Phoenix stays healthy, the sky's the limit. I don't expect them to win the championship, but it's the sky's the limit, and they would just be one of those teams that I think maybe a little bit of youth and inexperience may come back to haunt them in the playoffs.
That's my concern, is not so much you've got CP3 there and Booker's still young, but my concern is DeAndre Ayton. It's just that youth and experience in that center position.
You just hope that CP3 can be that sort of calming influence on everybody. But
I think
you can only calm people so much.
I think it's him he has to work on, purely for the fact of, I mean, look at the players he's going to come up against. That again, he's going to get bullied in there. Your the ADs, your LeBrons, your Jokic's. You know,
that's right.
He's the one that is my only concern in that side, purely because he is young and experienced. So is Booker and all that. But, I mean, for a young center, it might be a bit harder. And that's look, if they make the semis, if they make the finals, it's brilliant. But if they make the semis of the Western Conference, I'm sure that's value already for what the CP3 trade. I'm sure it would be.
Well, they're paying him enough money, and gets it. Yeah, but the money only gets worse as the years go on. So that's
same as Russell Westbrook.
they're gonna be paying for it, so they'll want.
It's 45.
They'll want to have
year.
Success. It's like 45 million in the last year of the deal. Yeah. It's
isn't that next year
money.
Or the year after? I think it's next year.
I think it's the year after. I don't even think 45. It's next year. I think it's the year after.
$45 million. But hey, he's proving it.
Well, it's what else I said, you know, he makes teams better, and people will go out there and rag on him and say, oh, he's never made a conference finals, and oh, how can he be one of the best point guards that's ever played the game? He's one of five players in the NBA that have got 10,000 plus assists.
Yeah,
you can't tell me that he's not a great point guard.
Oh, he's a great point guard.
Anybody
he makes. I mean, Charles Barkley always talks about he's an MVP caliber player because
absolutely
he makes teams better. He really does. And you know, just to finish up, the other one that speaking of point guards that's making teams better somehow is Rajon Rondo of the Clippers. That could be a shrewd little bit.
Are they 6-0 with Rondo?
Is that what
I've seen? 6-0 with Rondo.
And they're 8-2 at the moment. So they're on a little bit of a run at the moment. They just lost their last game, but 8-2 in the last 10 games. So I'll play off Rondo.
Yeah,
I guess
they're always going to be overshadowed by, you know, the big brother in LA. But apparently, Paul George has been on a bit of a tear as of late. Now in the last 8 games, I think he's averaging like 33 points, shooting 50%+ from the field, like shooting 58%. From three, it's insane that a player like that sort of caliber can be that good in the regular season and then just have this horrendous reputation, which precedes him, I guess, that's in the playoffs that he just can't get it done.
I find it interesting that, you know, Mr. Kawhi Leonard just I don't know. You just don't hear his name that much, is she? I don't know if that's a smoke screen.
I just don't think you hear the kind of hoopla that you do around some other teams that you do for the Clippers, and they're just quietly plugging away for 40 wins.
But they're in LA. But that's what I think. It's just crazy. You know what I mean? I think it's great. Like if he's flying under that radar, who cares?
No, that's right. Well, that's what I mean. The top two seeds in the East. In Philly and Brooklyn, they got 39 and 38 wins, and LA's got more. Yeah, the Clippers have got more than that.
Yeah, but that's the West. They're
a three seed.
I'm sure
in LA that there is a little bit of talk about the Clippers, but I just don't think nationally internationally really that they don't get as much fanfare as obviously what the Lakers do. The Lakers put banners. They put championship banners in their rafters where to cover those up when the Clippers play in the Staples Centers. They put, big portraits of their players up there to cover up.
It's so funny seeing it. I think it's hilarious.
The sooner that they can get their own arena, the better.
Yeah. Well, Ballmer wants to. I'm sure that'll come to a standstill, obviously. It's sort of pretty much finished. I think SoFi Stadium. I'm not saying it. They've been playing in there, but I mean to be actually used.
Well, it's out of that precinct. I think it's out at Inglewood.
Inglewood, it is out there.
So, it's nothing like Compton, Long Beach, but
Inglewood. Oh my God, we're just starting to see California.
I think that's
love.
Where everybody gets their perception of Inglewood being a. Oh, look, trust me, like when. When I was in the States, it was it's very close to the airport. It's very close to LAX, Inglewood, and we thought that it was going to be a nice, very short walk from LAX to our hotel that was in Inglewood, and we sort of read our map wrong, and it said two and a half on us. It's like 2.5 Ks. That's not too bad, and then we forgot that we're in the States. It was 2.5 miles. So it was just like we're just dragging all this crap with us. We go underneath an overpass, like a bridge overpass.
Oh,
we see people's cardboard houses and laughter like hyenas, like we're in the Serengeti. And it's like, all right, we got to get the hell away from there. And then we got from underneath the bridge, and all of a sudden it's just like we're in a hip hop clip. We're just like, oh my god, like we're not going in the right direction, surely. And we kept following the map.
I can't believe you walked.
Oh, I don't know. That's, I mean, we're just like, 2.5 Ks. That's nothing. We'll be sweet.
Oh, yeah. Well, you clearly didn't think of the whole mile thing. And yeah, that makes total sense. But still.
So dumb.
Just when you start walking Inglewood, I'm surprised your bag didn't get taken.
Oh, my God. This is no word of a lie. And you can verify this from one Ty Young. When we got to the hotel, we bailed out. It was like, right, we're hungry. Let's go down. And we went to like a Chinese chicken place. We got some stuff there. There was like some crazy woman outside there yelling and screaming and running around in the car park. And we're just like, we've got to get the hell out of here. So when we went back to the hotel room, we got all of our luggage, like our suitcases and everything, and like pushed them up against the door. Like, you know, as we locked and deadbolted the door of the hotel where we were staying there, we just loaded all of our bags up behind there as some sort of phony barricade that, you know, maybe would have stopped intruders getting into the room. I seriously doubt it. But you look at the window that was above the fridge and it had bars on it like we're in a freaking prison.
Oh my god.
Oh my lord. That was messed up.
Oh well, you know you don't know accommodation, I suppose. You can only see little bits of pictures, but
I guess it was a reasonably priced Best Western motel, you know, sort of room. But yeah, no, that was we're all about the experience. It was all about having
just like Tupac said in California Love, Inglewood up to no good.
Exactly, that's right. I think some of them people were up to no good. Good grief.
Oh, I love it. Well, that'll do it. That's a great way to finish on an NBA pod. That's so good.
We just wanted to get the full, authentic LA experience.
Yeah, clearly you did. Imagine if you took a wrong turn and ended up at Compton. Oh, my God. Oh,
God, no. We would have had to have walked a hell of a long way to be able to get there.
Yeah, of course. But if you had to turn the wrong way, who knows?
Well, we thought we were going the wrong way. Hyena laughter coming from these cardboard boxes that were underneath the bridge.
Because they're laughing at probably just these two white Australians dragging these bags. Yeah, a
couple of white boys dragging their luggage behind them.
Oh, my God. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Final Play Pod. Facebook, as always, Final Play Podcast, where you'll see all our links to our pods as well as gimco.com.au. Oh my god! I don't want to say anymore. I just want to hear more of that story now. Who walks around in Inglewood?
Oh my god! Well, and that's the thing. If we've got a little bit of time before we sign off, it basically we were flying from LA to New Orleans, and that's where we're picking up our Kentucky tour. So we got to LAX, and We're sitting in the terminal and I'm eating this unbelievable pizza. Oh my god, I'm eating this unbelievable
pizza.
In LAX. At the airport.
Yeah, it's beautiful pizza.
It was like a wood-fired pizza.
Yeah, it was beautiful, eh?
Oh
yeah.
My god.
Is that the
so
one where
good.
You look out the view out, you can see LA like just the smog and the skyline out there, kind of thing?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there, we're waiting for our flight to go to New Orleans, and all of a sudden we see about 10 TSA. You know, sort of people just bolt through the airport and we're like, all right, that was weird. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, there's bells and whistles and beepers and sirens and everything saying that we need to evacuate the airport. And we're just like, uh-oh, airport's on fire or something like that. So this is really weird. So we all had to bail. I had to leave my pizza. I was so disappointed. So we,
it was good.
I was hungry.
Yeah, yeah.
We all had to get to our nearest exit, and there's, you know, this TSA, you know, people sort of ushering us to the nearest exits and everything like that. And so as we're waiting outside the terminal, because it's only like, you know, not even half an hour till our flight, and we're sort of waiting outside the terminal, you know, all huddled up into big groups and everything, and you know, we're sort of just thinking, it's like we're going to make our flight, right? They're just going to delay flights. And as we look up into the sky, like above the runways of LAX, and you see, I don't know, 6 or 7 news helicopters. And it's like, all right, this is big. This is big.
Yeah.
And so we're in Terminal 4.
Yeah.
So over in Terminal 2, which is sort of a little bit more, I think that's over towards the international. A very, very disgruntled ex-TSA person came in with a semi-automatic weapon and started discharging at people and at TSA agents. So
discharging?
Yes. He was
discharging in the air, but at
people. He didn't kill anyone, but he shot several TSA agents people in Terminal 2.
TSA?
That's the security over there. That's their security.
But I'm saying, I just what?
Oh yeah.
He's disgusting.
He was very, very selective on the people that he was shooting.
Yeah, that's not
so
good.
And that was it. They cancelled every single flight that afternoon. Everything.
Yeah.
We all got huddled onto buses, and I'm absolutely busting for a piss. And it was just unbelievable. We all get ushered onto these buses, and we all get taken over to the Tom Bradley International part of the airport, totally deserted, nobody in it, and we're all huddled in there like refugees, and they're coming out with these little boxes of they had like little bags of pretzels and little bottles of water and stuff like that, and it was so bizarre, and it's just like we're meant to be going to New Orleans, so we had to rebook our flight. There was no direct flights to New Orleans the next day, so we had to go via Phoenix. But that wasn't until like 7 o'clock in the morning the next day. So we had to spend another night in LA, and that's where we're just like, let's just get something that's totally close to the airport. So, we just go there and sleep there the night, and then, catch a cab back to the airport the next morning so we could get to New Orleans. But and that was definitely an experience and a half, with what happened at the airport that day, and then, proceeding to, find ourselves right in the of Inglewood, California.
Oh my God! That's
I actually took a picture because it's on like a telephone pole, like electricity pole, saying welcome to the city of Inglewood. That's the scariest sign I've ever seen in my life.
Wow. That'll do me. My name's Jason Smith, but I'm going to say stay tuned for Plum's LA stories because they keep coming out every week. I'm sure you got more somewhere. Oh, that's so good.
It's such an unbelievable experience.
I don't have any of that problem. I'll tell you my story in the next pod, but any LA problem. I'll tell you my story in the next pod. Was not that problem. Not even close to that. One was a really good experience, but anyway.
Oh, look! Don't get me wrong. Like we had a great time. And the thing that I was so dirty about as well, not besides the fact that I had to leave my pizza, but it duped us out of a day in New Orleans. That's what I was filthy about.
Well, that's true. Yeah, but what can you do? But you didn't have to pay for the flight. It was all
covered by travel insurance and stuff. So.
But what about and we had to pay for the accommodation for you?
We had to file, with our travel insurance when we come back to Australia. Yeah. So it was all paid for and all a very legit type story. So it was no problems with travel insurance and stuff. So but we still had to pay everything up front though.
Oh, of course you would have had to. You had no choice. The hotels don't care about all that crap and the flights and all that.
Exactly. So. Yeah, exactly. Well, we had to pay for another flight. Our flight was cancelled, so we had to pay for another flight.
Yeah.
So it was all expenses.
You want to sign off?
We're all about the experience. I'm Miles Compton, Long Beach, Inglewood, Plum.
Inglewood. Don't stop in Inglewood.
do not get the authentic LA experience in Inglewood. Although, you know, that's like we said, you know, with the SoFi Stadium and you know, possible, you know, the new basketball arena going in out there.
And what's the is the Forum out there? What's the
Greater Western Forum's out there as well.
Yeah.
That's still up and operational.
Still has gigs going. Yeah. So it's a good bit. But you might.
Yeah, they have music concerts and everything at the Forum. It can't be that bad of an arena.
No, but it must be like any place where you go, like there's a good part of probably of Inglewood and then there's a terrible part of Inglewood.
Oh, possibly,
you,
yeah. Possibly.
You just happen to be, you know, I'd probably stay somewhere next to SoFi. But anyway. Oh, that's hilarious. Have a good week, everyone.
See you from Inglewood.